Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. I'm looking out the window, and I'm going to tell you right now, it is a rainy, grey London. If you like the colour grey, then where I am right now is absolutely perfect. But far, far away, Jeff Reinbold, paint the scene. Where are you, my friend?
I am at a place called the Boathouse, which is right. It's a really nice restaurant right over Haleiwa Harbor in Hawaii, and I'm having a glass of Pinot Grigio as we speak. And by the way, I just want to take exception to whoever said it was the reason the technical difficulties that we faced yesterday was I had too many Mai Tais. I never touched those things.
Jeff, I wouldn't have suggested that at all, but, you know, the thought did cross my mind. But yeah, you know, you're more of a wine connoisseur. But you're living the life for a few days because you've had your draft. How did the draft go for you last week?
It went really, really well, you know. And here we go. You know, it's just like we talked about before. You said, "Don't be one of those guys that says that you got everybody that you wanted and you got them in a spot. You can't believe he was there when you got him." But really, it really went pretty well for us. There are some kids that. That we really felt, you know, in the CFL draft's a little different than the NFL draft, Neil, in that generally after the first round, you really are just drafting best player available because it's a different depth of the pool. But for us, we were able to get positions addressed that we felt like we really needed. We got a young wide receiver from Southern University in Baton Rouge that I think has got a chance to play early in his career, and a couple defensive kids that I think will certainly make impacts on special teams early in their, you know, first couple of years in their career, but have a chance to be starters in this league, and that's what you're trying to get, you know, in the first couple of rounds of the draft. So it was good, I think.
See, I was hoping, you know, we're friends. You can confide in me. It's just you and me talking. We're not recording yet, honestly. I wanted you to tell me, Neil, we had an absolute nightmare. These guys can't put one shoe on properly.
There were a couple that you know, as you're sitting there and you know, the team in front of you makes their pick, you go, "Oh no,
we wanted him."
Because there was a kicker I really wanted, and you know, kickers, it's such a dicey thing. You know, it's hard to know where they're going to go in the draft, and we had the kid slotted as about a, you know, from third to fifth round, and third round nobody took him, fourth round nobody took him, and then fifth round right before us another team took him. So, you know, that's the price of doing business.
Absolutely.
Hey, I gotta tell you this. I cannot escape football, Neil. I mean, it's amazing. I am staying on a piece of property here in Haleiwa, and the guy that I'm, it's really a rustic surf hut that I'm staying in, and the guy that I'm renting it from said, he asked me what I did for a living, and I said, I'm a football coach. And he goes, "Oh, are you really?" He goes, "Well, then you probably know our neighbor." And I said, "Who's your neighbor?" And he goes, "Pete Carroll."
Wow.
I said, "What?" the house right across this from the place where I live is Pete Carroll's house.
Wow.
And he bought it about 6 years ago, and this is where he comes to get away and decompress, and you know, so I can't get away from it.
Excellent. Well, I was feeling a bit jealous. You know, I was seeing all the periscopes and the amazing scenery and talk of surfing and paddling every day. And then I saw that you're living in a garden shed, so I didn't feel too bad.
Yeah. Well, it's about what it is, a garden shed. But I think I'm going to sneak over the fence and take some periscope Pete's house.
I think it's a piece of NFL history. That's the shed that Robert Griffin III kept disappearing into during that playoff game a few years ago.
They had it moved here from DC.
Exactly. Right. Listen, because we're not going to do a full hour today because we know you're on your holidays and you're on your vacation. We're going to dig right into it in a second. We're going to do state of the franchise: Houston, Minnesota, and Cincinnati. But first, a couple of little bits of news, Jeff. There's a few bits. This is the time when coaches want to get through these OTAs. Mark Sanchez is going to miss the first ones for Denver. He's got a thumb injury on his non-throwing hand. Danny Amendola's had an operation which could put his week one in jeopardy. Sammy Watkins got a broken bone in his toe. But this thing with the Jets continues to roll on with the quarterback situation. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick wants $15 million a year. The Jets want to pay him $8 million. But Jets fans, don't worry, because Bryce Petty has improved this year, Jeff, by playing the Madden game. I mean, sometimes you just got to be quiet, haven't you? Not talk to the media.
I'm going to tell you something. You're exactly right. There's a lot of wisdom in saying nothing sometimes, because when you say too much, you can really come off bad. And I'm going to tell you something. If that's what they're counting on is a guy that improved his game by playing Madden, then there's a whole lot of coaches that got to be worrying about their jobs, because we're way overvalued if you can be an NFL quarterback by learning I'm playing Madden.
That was an interesting one for me. Let's get into this state of the franchise then, because Houston went 9-7, and it was a tale of two seasons, really, Jeff. They opened with 2 wins and 5 losses, but they turned it around. They won 7 of their last 9. And really, defense drove the way. They held opponents to 10 points or less in 6 of those contests in the final 9. But then they suffered an embarrassing 30-0 defeat to Kansas City in the first round. That's why they went out and got Brock Osweiler, isn't it? This offense needed to be upgraded.
Yeah, you know, they were really a... when they lost Arian Foster, and then, you know, you look at... There really were a one-trick pony on offense. You know, you had one real legitimate threat outside. So, you know, they went through. Again, Neil, you probably know this better than me, but I think it was 4 or 5 starting quarterbacks in one season in your playoff team. That's a recipe for, you know, being one and done in the playoffs. So, you know, I give them credit, and I give Mr. McNair, the owner of the Texans, and O'Brien and those guys having the courage and the resources to go out and get a guy that they think can be their face of the franchise and a quarterback that can get them to the Super Bowl. That's what everybody's playing for, and that's a Super Bowl caliber defense right now.
Yes,
and I think with some of the moves that they made in the offseason, that they're putting themselves in a position to certainly be a playoff team, and you got to get in the playoffs first. And once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Yeah, that's going to be tough in that AFC South this year. But let's look at some of the numbers, and then we'll dig into the Texans. So offense was 19th overall, 18th in the passing game. Defense was third. They were the best third down defense in the NFL. I mean, the secondary was, secondary was very good towards the end of the season. J.J. Watt, still an absolute beast. But they did add to the offense. Brock Osweiler, we talked about, 4 years. $72 million deal. Lamar Miller, very nice pickup in free agency. Jeff Allen along the offensive line. And then they go out and get Will Fuller in the first round of the NFL draft. So you're right, Jeff. They looked at the offense. You know, there's your disparity. 19th on offense, 3rd on defense. We know what side of the ball we're going to attack in the offseason.
Yeah, and I'm not... And we talked about this at the draft, Neil. I'm not a big Fuller fan.
No.
Because I think he's got a long way to go to be a finished receiver in the NFL. But the one thing that the guy can do, certainly, is he can take the top off the coverage. And that's really what they need, because they need a guy opposite Hopkins that can stretch the field and can give them that Ted Ginn-esque, if you will, home run hitter at wideout.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and like you said, Lamar Miller, I think, is really a good back. And I think he's the kind of back that... you can build your running game around. They're doing things. This is a good young football team, and I think this is a team that, as they continue to build, has a chance to make an impact. Now, you mentioned how tough that division is that they play, and that's certainly, it's not going to, nobody's going to go easy. Yeah. And I think the division, as you look at it, the division has gotten stronger this offseason.
What do we make of... I liked some of the stuff I saw from Brock Osweiler, Jeff. I'm interested to see more, because obviously just 7 starts. This is the nature of the NFL, though. He's probably been overpaid for now, because he hasn't proven it for an entire season. But that's what we talk about with the desperation for finding a franchise quarterback. You know, there were parts of it where he did look like he could become that, but obviously they've taken a gamble.
Yeah, and you're right. And you know, is he worth that much money right now based on seven starts? You can't say he is, but the bottom line is, you know, it's a supply and demand business. Yeah. And when quarterback is, you know, everybody wants one, everybody has to have one, well, if there's only a very few out there, and you're gonna overpay. I mean, it's just the nature of the business. How can you say that Brock Osweiler should be making more money than Tom Brady? I mean, you know, but that's the reality of doing business in the NFL today. And that's why I say to, you know, Bill O'Brien and to, you know, Mr. McNair, you know, congratulations and kudos for going out there and, you know, showing your fan base that you're serious about winning. And I think that's really important message that you need to send.
Yeah, just a couple of other things on offense, Jeff. Alfred Blue and Jonathan Grimes are nice little pieces that will complement Lamar Miller. I don't think they have enough at tight end. CJ Fedorowicz has not developed yet. Ryan Griffin's still that way as well. So this is not the complete offense. But I wanted to ask you about third round draft pick, what we could expect to see from Braxton Miller out of Ohio State, because he's quite an interesting story, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys, you know, and it's Ohio State had a lot of success, if you will, and, you know, with their players getting drafted in the NFL, and certainly they, you know, won national championships, they're used to winning. There's a lot of positive things about taking an Ohio State kid. But when you look at Miller, you're looking at a guy that, you know, you're really not sure what you're getting.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're getting a talented athlete, but, you know, how NFL ready is he? And that's, I think, the question that you're going to ask. And, you know, and the only way to know is you got to get him out there, you got to trot him out there, and you got to get him playing.
Let's turn our attention to that defense then, and it is all about J.J. Watt. Third time in his five-year career, he was named the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. 17 and a half sacks, Jeff. He, I think, still was an MVP level. The reason he wasn't considered the league MVP this year, like he was in the discussion the year before, was because he didn't play at tight end and have those five touchdown catches. But what production from a guy who broke his hand during the season and, by all accounts, literally had his groin muscle hanging off the bone at the end of the year?
Yeah, you know what? You talk about a guy that is an icon in the city and a guy that really... You know, I don't know, you know, Houston has absolutely fallen in love with him. And here's a case in point, Neil. He just had a charity softball game in Houston where the Astros play. That's the Major League Baseball team in Houston.
Yep.
And the crowd at his charity softball game outdrew 14 separate Astro home dates so far this season.
Well, Jeff, I saw that. I saw pictures of Vince Wilfork, you know, going out in the dungarees and hitting the ball, and I thought he was doing one of those kind of celebrity appearances at a Major League Baseball game. I had no idea at the start, because the crowd just was huge.
It's amazing. And, you know, his work ethic, his, you know, activity in the community, his humbleness, all of those things have really ingratiated him in the Houston community. And he has become, and this is really hard, you know, I don't know when the last time, maybe, you know, really, Ray Lewis, I guess, in Baltimore, but I don't know when the last time a defensive football player has been the face of the franchise.
Right.
I mean, and that's truly what he has become.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And I guess he opens up opportunities for others, Jeff. Whitney Mercilus is starting to make plays outside linebacker. And I think a guy who could potentially break out in 2016, if he can stay healthy, is Jadeveon Clowney, the first overall pick in 2014. Still only 40 tackles and 4.5 sacks last year, Jeff. But if he can stay healthy, he can thrive in this defense.
Well, you know what? That's what you're hopeful. And when they took him, you know, you based everything when you took him on potential and what he did as a junior in college, because his senior year wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And he had a knee, and he's gone through microfracture surgery and all the other things. But, you know, if he kind of is that missing cog right now on defense, because they've got a, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned Merciless, because they've got a really nice core of linebackers in Houston. Mm-hmm. And in that 3-4 defense, that's really important. Now, the ultimate now would be for Clowney to become that dominant edge rusher that every great 3-4 team needs. And if he can somehow stay healthy and you know, stay focused and do all the things that his physical talents say he should be able to do, then the Texans are going to really be a handful on defense.
Yeah, this is you've still got Brian Cushing, you've got Jonathan Joseph in the secondary, Kareem Jackson. So it's a talented team, Jeff, but this was a playoff team who were one and done last year. So to go back to the playoffs, you know, I'm just looking at this division. Blake Bortles, Andrew Luck, Marcus Mariota. A lot of this is going to fall, not all of it, because there's still a team that's driven by its defense. But Brock Osweiler is going to have to step up. Do you see this being a playoff team again in 2016?
Well, I think it's a team that's going to be in the thick of it, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of it's going to depend, as you say, on what Brock's production is. He's going to have to win some games for him. And, you know, you look around that division now, and you've got a quarterback in Indianapolis who can win games for you. You've got a quarterback in Jacksonville who can win games for you. You've got a quarterback in Tennessee who can win games for you. Now, can Osweiler be that guy in Houston? If he can be, then I think the Texans are a playoff team. If he can't, and he's not able to win games for him, because your quarterback's got to win some games for you. He's got to make certain throws. He's got to make plays to win games for you. If he can do that, then they can be a playoff team, because they're certainly good enough on defense, and I think they've got enough pieces right now on offense that, you know, they'll be good. You mentioned that playoff game, Neil, and I think that what was – you and I sat there as we did the game, and the opening kickoff came back 100 yards on them, and they just couldn't recover from that. And it, you know, it ended up costing the special teams coach his job, and you know, that's the nature of the business in the NFL. But, you know, I think they've got to get better on special teams, and they've got to, you know, recognize that they've got to play great complementary football, and then their quarterback's going to have to make some plays for them.
All right, so that's one playoff contender, the Houston Texans. Let's move to another, the Minnesota Vikings. They're going to move into their shiny new stadium, US Bank Stadium, this season, and they have high hopes as they move into that stadium, because they were 11-5 last year. They won the NFC North. They lost in the most heartbreaking of fashion when they'd beaten Seattle up in the wild card round of the playoffs. Blair Walsh missing that field goal with just, 22 seconds remaining, 27-yard field goal. They have kind of put a little bit of a target on themselves, Jeff, because Adrian Peterson came out a couple of weeks ago and said, sit back and watch, because we are going to play for the Super Bowl. We are now a Super Bowl contender, not a playoff contender. But as you look at this team, there's a lot to like here.
Yeah, there is. And it's unfortunate to me that Adrian goes out and makes those kind of statements, because, you know, reality is you got to win one playoff game before you become a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can talk about the missed field goal all you want, but you got to make a play at a critical moment, and they didn't. And there were other plays, remember, Neil, where they,
Wilson has the snap go over his head, and then he's scrambling around.
Exactly. And at the end of the game, they don't use the time very well. They stay in bounds, don't run out of bounds. There are some things that Super Bowl champions typically do that they didn't do. So, but I tell you what, I don't know if there's a team in football right now that in 2 years has absolutely changed the culture of their football team and the personality of their football team faster than what Mike Zimmer's been able to do in Minnesota. Because, you know, they were under Leslie Frazier, they weren't real physical, tough team. That, you know, they had some talent. They just, you know, didn't really play as good as they should have played when you look at their talent level. And, you know, Zimmer comes in, makes tough decisions. They get rid of the quarterback. They bring in Teddy Bridgewater. They toughen up on defense. They, you know, they become much more aggressive in their approach to the game. And it's amazing how all that has transpired in, you know, really in 2 years with Zimmer.
Jeff, I think you've hit the nail on the head with this team, because I spent a lot of time with Leslie Frazier, and I know you know Coach Frazier as well. He is the nicest guy. If you were sat now at that boathouse and he walked in, he would be one of the best people in the world to sit and have a drink with. Nice guy, softly spoken. Yeah, very, very gentle. Mike Zimmer is, I don't know, I mean, look at when the Rams player hit Teddy Bridgewater in the head. Zimmer was out on the field getting ready to go to war for his players, and I think his players love that. But he also holds his players accountable. He will get on them if they have a bad performance. And a classic example, Moritz Boehringer, the German wide receiver, who recently went through all of the big hoopla at the NFL draft, and then he arrives at OTAs, and Zimmer told him off for all the TV attention and said, now it's time to play football. I mean, this is a guy that is, I think the players love him, but they also know that they've got a little bit of fear of him as well. It's not bad.
Yeah, you know what? I've known Mike since, and this is amazing, 1983, I think it was. Mike's coaching at Weber State, and I'm coaching at Montana. And, you know, we were in the same league for 3 years, and I watched him. Then he went to the Cowboys, and I don't care whether you're talking to Deion Sanders or Adam Jones or, you know, any of the, you know, tough personalities that he's had to deal with. One thing that every single guy that's ever been coached by Mike Zimmer will tell you is he's going to give you tough love, and he's going to be honest with you about your performance and, you know, what you did well and what you didn't do well and what you got to get better. And I think that's refreshing in this day and age of, you know, the NFL, where it's so much guys are CYA, cover your, and it's Okoli is what we say here in Hawaiian. But, you know, that Mike is one of those guys that he just doesn't know how to be politically correct. He just knows how to be honest. And that's, I think, he and Bruce Arians are two of the guys that are really kind of redefining the nature of the head coaching position that way.
Let's go through a couple of the numbers. So offense was ranked 29th in the NFL. It was 4th in rushing, 31st in passing. So, Jeff, I'm just going to throw this stat out there. Minnesota's wide receivers scored an NFL low 6 touchdowns last year in 16 games. This is a passing league, but this is a running team. Adrian Peterson still drives the offense. The defense was 13th. But they were 5th on third down. So kind of middle of the pack in defense. I think they played better than their numbers suggest on defense. But let's start with that offense. 31st in passing. They add Laquon Treadwell. They lose Mike Wallace at receiver. But they have to... I know that they're not built for being a passing team, but we have to see more than these 98-yard passing days out of Teddy Bridgewater sometimes.
Yeah, you're right, Neil. He's got to take a step, and their offense, you know... Under North Turner's got to take a step. You know, I will say this. This is a team with a very good tight end.
Yep.
This is a team with, you know, when you watch Minnesota play, almost every third down situation or second long situation, Peterson's out of the game because they just don't have faith in his ability to catch the football out of the backfield. So they've got to create weapons somewhere. And I think that Laquon Treadwell signing was really a good signing for them, because he's a Zimmer kind of guy, and you know, he's a tough, wins contested balls, physical, great blocker, all the things that, you know, he's not a prima donna wide receiver. Yeah. And I think that's you know, exactly what Mike wants, and I think he's going to be a Anquan Boldin type addition to that Minnesota offense.
Let's look at the Adrian Peterson. Obviously, still is playing at an extremely high level. But Jeff, the guys in front of him are going to be interesting to watch, because John Sullivan could be back at center. Joe Berger was one of the best centers in the entire NFL in his relief last year. Maybe he moves to guard, where they've already signed Alex Boone as well. They've got Phil Loadholt coming back. Matt Khalil, the kind of jury's still out on him, but. When you look at this running game and the horses he's got up front, there's a lot to like there as well.
Yeah, there certainly is. And I think that's, you know, when you look at that division and, you know, you've got a team in Detroit that can throw it all over the yard, and you got a team in Green Bay that throws it all over the yard. You know, really the team that is built to, you know, to – play old school type NFL, and what we always considered the black and blue division, the NFC North, rather, the you know, that's really the Vikings are really, you know, going back to the future, if you will, in how they approach the game.
What about the defense? Because they, you know, they did kind of, they went toe to toe with Seattle in that game in the brutally cold weather outdoors in the old University of Minnesota Stadium. They've still got some, I think, some top-end players here, Jeff. Chad Greenway can still get it done, but young players as well. Anthony Barr was one of the best kind of off-the-ball linebackers, if you will, in the NFL last year. I think Harrison Smith, I think we're both still big fans of Harrison in terms of what he brings to a defense. Xavier Rhodes is now a top-end cornerback, and they draft Mackenzie Alexander in the second round.
Yeah, and I think, you know, let's talk a little bit about Harrison Smith, you know, a guy that's been on the road with us in the UK. And when he came out of Notre Dame, I watched him at the Senior Bowl, and I liked him, but I just didn't know as a too high safety how he was going to be back there. People tried to make comparisons to John Lynch, and I don't know if those are fair comparisons. I think what they've gotten now out of Harrison in this new scheme is you see him down around the line of scrimmage more, you see him blitz more, and I think those things really play to his skill sets. And I give Zimmer credit for that. This is a much more aggressive attacking style defense in Minnesota than you saw under Frazier. And that I think fits hand in glove with what they do offensively.
Yeah, I think Harrison's very happy to be able to bring a more physical style. I guess this is a team. I feel like they're ready to make that run, that step. But I need more from Teddy Bridgewater. That's the only thing that's holding me back at the moment from getting on Adrian Peterson's bandwagon. Are you feeling the same way?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something, Neil. I think that here's one thing that's really going to help Teddy Bridgewater is you're going to be playing 8 games inside.
Yes.
And that's really, I think, to his benefit. He does not have a big arm, and he's a small-handed guy, and you know, both of those things are problematic when you get out in bad weather. Now, he's still going to have to win games in Detroit. He's still going to have to win games in Chicago. He's still going to have to win games in Green Bay outside in the October, November, December in the division. But he's going to be inside in Detroit. He's going to be inside for 8 games in his own stadium. And I think that bodes well for him.
Yeah, there's lots to learn. I'm just looking at the depth chart. Linval Joseph was a beast at defensive tackle. Sharif Floyd, Everson Griffin. I mean, there's pieces in place, Jeff.
Yeah, and Kyle, you know, again, we talk about tight ends all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something. For my money, all right, you can take Kyle Rudolph and you can put him in the top half in the NFL, because what I love about him, Neil, is he gives you both aspects.
Yeah.
He can block and he's a great receiver. And, you know, even though that's not a big part of their game, you know, when they want to, they can flex him out and they can put him out there, you know, like Gronkowski out at wide receiver and all that stuff. But that's just not who they are. That's not, you know, what Norv has built their personality to be. But you go play action, he is a tough adjustment. He's a tough matchup. He's long, he can run, and he is tough as nails going over the middle to catch the ball.
Yeah, I recently had to write a piece, Jeff, where I was asked my top 5 tight ends in the league, and I actually put Kyle Rudolph in that top 5, and he had kind of half the numbers of some of the other guys in the top 5. You know, he was 400 or 500 yards receiving, 40-odd catches, but you got to think about the context that he's playing in and the offense he's playing in, how unselfish he's being. And also, tight end is still part of that job description, is to be able to block, and he can do it like a lineman.
I agree with you 100%. See, that's why, and again, people may take exception to that, but that's, you know, Neil, you know the game. You know the way that the game's supposed to be played, and you know the value of a guy who can play more than, you know, just a flex tight end out there catching the football. And, you know, especially for that football team, because they are going to be a run-first football team. And, you know, his ability to block at the point of attack, Zach Lyon's ability to be that, you know, Daryl Moose Johnson kind of fullback that offense needs. Norv needs that kind of guy in his offense. And so those guys may not be, you know, sexy picks when you start talking, you know, about Madden, you know, who you're gonna put on your Madden team. But I'm gonna tell you something. Give me those. I don't care about your Madden team. I want to talk about the team that's gonna go out there and put their hand in the dirt.
All right, we're just about to move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, but I like to live vicariously through you, Jeff, so I can hear some clinking in the background. I know you're looking out over the ocean. Are we still on the wine, or have you moved on to coffee? What's going on?
Excuse me, it's a message in a bottle I just got.
Pete Carroll said, stop looking over my lawn.
Yeah, exactly. He said, go over there and mow my lawn for me tomorrow, will you, kid?
Yeah, then get back in your shed. All right, so the Cincinnati Bengals, they went 12-4 last year. They were first in the AFC North, but what a memorable and controversial wild card exit to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Had an absolute meltdown at the end of that game. Jeremy Hill started with a fumble. Vontaze Burfict with the hit on Antonio Brown. Then Adam Pac-Man Jones gets another penalty. It leads to a playoff exit to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jeff, this for me was a team... that had a genuine Super Bowl look about them until Andy Dalton threw that interception against the Steelers in the regular season and decided to try and go and make a tackle.
Well, let me just say this. I want to say thank you to the Cincinnati Bengals, because one of the things that, you know, I do in my special teams meeting is we talk about, you know, situational football and, you know, how we're always looking for examples of how things can impact games. And I'm going to take that last 3 minutes of the Pittsburgh game, and I'm going to show it to our football team. And I'm going to say, this game was over, fellas. It's the playoffs. It's over. The game is over. Pittsburgh cannot win this unless Cincinnati somehow, you know, implodes. And exactly, it's, you know, we always talk about confirming with validity what you teach. That 3 minutes is going to be, you know, our kids are going to watch it, and over and over and over again watch it, because there's a lot of lessons in that. Now, will the Bengals take the lessons? That's the thing, because this is a very, very talented football team.
Yeah, it is.
And, you look at, I think, some of the acquisitions that they've made in the offseason, I think one of the ones that is most intriguing to me, Neil, is the hiring of Jim Haslett as the linebacker coach in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Because he's going to have, you know, he's going to deal with, you know, Dansby coming in there, and where's his place in the room going to be? You know, you look at Vontaze Burfict, and, you know, there's a guy that is a high-maintenance guy, high-production player, high-impact player, but a high-maintenance guy. So Haslett, who played in the league, who's been a head coach in the league, I think is a really, really good hire for Marvin, and hopefully he can be the guy that kind of reins in that, you know, craziness that goes on sometimes on the field.
Yeah, Vontaze Burfict has a 3-game suspension to start the 2015 season. It's a crowded and talented linebacker group, because Carlos Dansby, I think, can still play. Is probably happy to be out of Cleveland. Ray Maluga is still there, and they re-signed Vinny Ray to a 3-year extension. But let's flip over to offense for a few minutes, Jeff, because it's all about the quarterback. For this team, it was all about the quarterback, because Andy Dalton was having a career year. I think they became a pass-first team. And Andy Dalton, we'll get that question. Did Dalton develop naturally, or was it Hugh Jackson whispering in his ear? We'll find out this year, because he's kind of standing on his own now.
Well, I think there's a lot of people, and I think Hugh Jackson's one of them, that would tell you that it was Hugh Jackson that had a lot to do with that. But I'll be honest with you, it'll be interesting to see, because not only did Hugh get Andy to play at a very, very high level the years he was with him, he comes into a situation where he loses the starting quarterback as they're making a playoff run, and takes a young kid that, you know, really didn't have much background at all, not very many snaps at all, and, you know, I thought the young guy played extremely well, and I thought that Hugh really, you know, a lot of coaching quarterbacks, I think, Neil, is relationship football. Mm. You know, it's your ability to get on the same page with them and make them feel like you have confidence in them and that they're the guy and all of that. And I think that's what happened in Cincinnati. I think in the long haul in Cincinnati, that's a real positive, because McCarron showed that he can make plays. He can make enough throws. And, you know, I think that's critical for, you know, in your future, because now you got two guys that you can have confidence in.
Yeah, let's have a look at some of the players that are around Andy Dalton, because they lost 88 catches from their attack last season. Marvin Jones went to Detroit. Mohamed Sanu's gone to Atlanta. And I guess I feel they were itching for a wide receiver, Jeff, in that first round. But there was the run on them. Three went in a row. Will Fuller, Josh Doctson, and Laquon Treadwell. So then the Bengals go cornerback instead with William Jackson the third. But now we're going to have to find out. AJ Green, we know all about. Tyler Eifert, we know all about what he could do after the explosion last year. Now we need to see if Brandon LaFell can be the player he was from a couple of years ago, which he clearly wasn't last year.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, you look at those guys, and they're all guys that are capable of making plays. And I think LaFell will fit into this system of offense better than he did, you know, in New England. And, you know, that New England system's not an easy one for a young receiver to handle. And so I think for his, you know, for his future, I think that's probably, you know, that's probably a good situation for him.
What about Jeremy Hill? Is going to have to put that fumble behind him, Jeff, isn't he? Same way that Blair Walsh with Minnesota is going to have to put that kick behind him. You know, he said in I think it was an interview just recently, that it's going to haunt him. I mean, this is a good running back pairing. If Jeremy Hill can look after the ball and Giovanni Bernard, who's in a contract year, he's going to want to play hard. This can be a good 1-2 punch, but Hill's got to put something behind him first.
Yeah, and you know what? And I give the kid credit for, because he's not dodging it. He's talking about it, openly saying, hey, this was a huge play in my career, and it's not going to be the thing that defines who I am as a football player. You know, I think it's like anything, Neil. If you don't come to grips with it, if you're not honest about it, and if you let it become that thing everybody's in the room whispering about, you know, then it can become a defining moment in your career. It's part of life. It's part of playing in the National Football League. He put the ball on the ground at a time that was critical. Now, you know, Ernest Biner did the same thing in Cleveland. It's what happens when, you know, when you line up and play again, because there's one thing that's for sure in the NFL, is that what you did in the past has no bearing about today. And he's got to approach this thing from that standpoint. And I'm sure Marvin Lewis is really good with his players. And I'm sure he and Marvin will sit down and he's going to say, Marvin will say to Jeremy, we're going to stick the ball in your hands, and we're going to put it in your hands in critical situations. And, you know, that's the way it is. That's what great backs want. And, you know, we feel you're a great back.
So that's the Bengals offense. They were 15th in the NFL, 13th rushing, 15th passing. Let's move over to the defense that was 11th. Second in scoring, though, 7th against the run. It's a lot of the same cast of characters here, Jeff, because they're going to get back, you know, Geno Atkins, who was back to his best. You've got Michael Johnson, DeMata Pico, Carlos Dunlap up front. And they keep drafting these corners in the secondary. Marvin Lewis obviously feels in the NFL you can't have enough good ones.
You can't have enough corners, but I tell you what, it's a great way of, you know, you are poetry, Neil. You're absolute poetry. When you describe the Cincinnati Bengals defense as a cast of characters, I don't know if it could be put any better, because they truly are a cast of characters. But I'm going to tell you something. They are very, very talented, fast, physical, nasty cast of characters. And I think, you know, Kevin Coyle, you know, he's going to get some help, you know, from Haz. I think that's going to be that has the potential to be a really good mix.
Jeff, if you think I'm churning out poetry, you need to put the wine down. What about
saying? I didn't say it was poetry. It was more like haiku.
Yeah, that's about it. Safety, they lost Reggie Nelson. They let him leave via free agency, but they like the pairing that's potentially there. And they've re-signed George Iloka, and they've signed Sean Williams to a contract extension. So they feel they're still set along the back line. I mean, Jeff, is this a very, very talented team, as you mentioned. If you go through it position by position, you look at Andrew Whitworth, some of the guys along the offensive line. Tyler Eifert was one of the best tight ends in the NFL last year. Is this a Super Bowl team? Because there's no clear-cut favorite in the AFC.
Well, you know, again, it's that question everybody wants to know. Is this a Super Bowl team? I think it can be that.
Yeah.
Again, but... You know, we've been through a lot of football seasons together, Neil, and you know, you recognize that you got to stay healthy, you got to be hot at the right time. You know, there's so many factors that play into it. You just want to be good enough when you kick it off that you got a chance. And I think when you look at the Bengals, this is a team that I'm just going on paper now. Mm-hmm. If you look at them on paper, they have the physical talent throughout the roster, throughout their depth chart. The issue to me with the Bengals is the worst. You know, their biggest enemy is the Cincinnati Bengals in most cases.
Well, yeah, and Jeff, we get this kind of stuff it builds and builds, doesn't it? The whole one and done in the playoffs. What was it? The 1990 season was the last time they won a postseason game. I mean, all of that until you get that monkey off your back, and they had the monkey off their back. They'd taken the monkey off their back and launched it into the third row of the stands, and then they gave the game away against Pittsburgh.
Well, you know what, and you know, it's funny. It's a real dichotomy because you know you're in the locker room, and you know I have a really unique perspective because I'm in the locker room and I'm also in the media.
Yeah.
Well, in the locker room, you don't want the media constantly reminding you of the fact that you haven't won a playoff game since 1990, that you've imploded at most critical moments, that, you know, that your quarterback has never won a playoff game. All the stuff that we talk about, because that's our job in the media to talk about it, they don't, you know, in the locker room, you try and, you know, circle the wagons and not let that affect you. But it does affect you. And until you go out and do it, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be something that you've got to get over. And, you know, I'm a big Marv Lewis fan. I think Marvin's one of the better coaches in the league. I think he's done a tremendous job in a lot of really tough situations in Cincinnati. He's had to deal with some really interesting characters, as you say. And, you know, he's had a team that has been knocking on the door, but at some point, you either get somebody to answer the door or you kick the damn door down, one of the two. Yeah. But they got to find a way.
All right, so we just finished up on the Cincinnati Bengals. I want to thank Simon Hunter, who's a huge Bengals fan and a friend of mine. He was very excited for us to be doing the state of the franchise with the Bengals, Jeff, that he sent me. I would say it's about a 1,000 or 2,000 word text. Oh my goodness. Jeff broke into a car.
What's that?
Are you stealing cars?
No.
You are?
No, absolutely.
Jeff,
absolutely.
Get a taxi, my friend. Don't steal a car. So, Simon Hunter, I want to thank you for your long text. Jeff, this is brilliant. What's going on?
I don't have any idea.
Is it your car?
I don't
car?
Know what the heck is going on here.
Is it your car?
No, it's not my car, Neil.
Are you still in the restaurant or are we walking along the beach or something?
I'm walking along the beach in the car. I don't know what the heck's going on here.
So we're taking a romantic stroll along the beaches of Hawaii. You've got a little bit tired because it's nearly midnight there and you've tried to break into a car. I mean, come on, just get a cab.
Stop. Come on, will you stop? Will you tell me, you started the story about the big Bengals fan that sent you something. What did he send you?
Well, he sent me about, it's kind of lost the moment now, but he sent me about 2,000 words on text about his Bengals, which has been a huge help to me. But I think he's given himself repetitive strain injury. So I want to say thank you to Thank you to Simon Hunter, and I'm sorry you were so rudely interrupted. Shall we take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag before the police arrive?
Yes, let's do that. All right. What are you doing?
Right, quick one from Jason Conlon, who says, will the Denver Broncos bring in another quarterback or go with Mark Sanchez or Paxton Lynch? Thanks, Neil. I love the podcast, you clumsy sod. He's always saying that I'm dropping stuff whenever we're recording, Jeff. So I think this at this stage of the season, it's in the off season, it's going to be Sanchez or Lynch, isn't it? Or Trevor Siemian. They're not going to get... I think that Colin Kaepernick ship has sailed. Apparently they couldn't pull off a deal for Bradford. They're going to go with what they've got by now, surely.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? And here's what I'm hearing. Now, this is a really limited body of work, but I'm going to tell you something. Lynch has been very impressive.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sanchez now has the hand injury and the surgery on. Now, not throwing hand and all that other stuff, but I'm just telling you, don't be surprised if that kid, you know, halfway into his rookie season doesn't become the starter in that for that football team. Here's the thing, Neil. Think about that football team. They can run the ball. Mm. They play great defense. You don't have to make a lot of plays as the quarterback. You got to stay out of bad plays. And if there's anything that defines Mark Sanchez's career in the National Football League so far is what? He can't stay out of bad plays.
No. So, I think if Lynch progresses, and John Elway has said that he's going to pick it up much sooner than people think. And again, Jeff, in that offense, talk us, you know, if he's doing a lot of rollouts, is he only going to be asked to read half the field?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing about, you know, when you look at Kubiak's offense, I think one of the beautiful things about it is they incorporate play action so well. They get the quarterback out of the pocket. They don't ask a lot of their offensive linemen in terms of, you know, shotgun, taking the, you know, going back there and you got to protect the spot. And, you know, I think it's the kind of offense that a guy like Paxton Lynch, who has mobility, even though he's long, he's 6'7", he's got tremendous mobility. He's got a big arm. You watch what he did, Neil, and this to me is an important concept for Broncos fans to think about. You watch the improvement in his footwork from when he finished at Memphis in the bowl game to when he went to his pro day at Memphis, and you watch how much he improved. That says an awful lot to me about the kid. You know, he's coachable. He wants to be better. He's got a passion for the game. All of those things are positive, positive things. And again, remember, Kubiak has won a lot of football games with guys that are far less talented than Paxton Lynch.
All right, last question comes from Jordan Wright, who says, will Victor Cruz come back and have a good season? So, Jeff, Cruz has played 6 games in the last 2 years, but none at all in 2015. I'm in the he's going to have to show me camp, but I hope he does.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%, Neil. Obviously, I never, ever want to see a guy as promising and as charismatic and as, you know, as explosive as Victor Cruz was at his, you know, at his prime, have his career cut short by injury. So I would love to see him come back. I know, you know, Giants fans certainly would love to see him come back, you know, and be that guy again. But again, I think the nature, you know, that's my fan in me talking.
Yeah.
But when the coach in me speaks, it's more guarded optimism, and it's, okay, you're going to have to show me. I agree with you.
All right, so this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm glad that our listeners got to experience a night out with Jeff Reinbold, because this is what it's always like, listeners. He insists on wine, he insists that we go for walks on beaches, and he insists that we steal cars. Now you know what I have to deal with.
Oh my goodness, you are... it's a good thing you're my friend.
I know, you wouldn't want an enemy like me, would you, Jeff? Listen, how much longer are you there for?
I'm going to be here until like Sunday, I guess. I get on a plane, they got to... You know what, I actually was thinking about this today. I wonder if I just went like missing, if anybody would really miss me.
Well, we would here, and so would all of our listeners. So until next week, when we'll be back, and enjoy the rest of your holiday, Jeff. Kudos to you for checking in from Hawaii. Say goodbye to our dear listeners.
Aloha.